Well, going to the US first and just looking at what's happening over there. In terms of the data, we're getting a little bit of flattening off in some of these indicators in the US. They've still got good expansion going, but it's not quite as strong as it has been in the past. So, for example, you know, we had two of the regional manufacturing purchasing managers' reports came out, the usual ones that come out early, the New York State one or the Empire State one, and also the Philadelphia Fed survey, both for August. And the August Empire State survey came down from 43 down to 18.3. It's still expansionary, and it's a good expansionary number, but you know, obviously nowhere near as phenomenally strong as it was going back to July. And it's the same story for the Philly Fed survey, which came back, well, in a less pronounced fashion. It came back from 21.9 down to 19.4. So still expanding, but you know, not quite as strong. We also had July retail sales came out, and the spending has come back a little bit in the United States through the month of July. So we saw retail sales, which were expected to fall about 0.2% in the month, actually fell by 1.1%. And core retail sales, taking out the volatile items, they were expected to rise by 0.2%. They fell by 0.4%. That's against monthly increases, which have been averaging about 1% over the previous months before that. So some pullback running through there. Industrial production is still up strongly. Factory production, as it is all the way around the world, is still going pretty well. We had July industrial production. That was up 0.9%, beat expectations after being up 0.2%. And housing, it's becoming a bit mixed. We had the National Association of Home Builders Index. You know, at its strongest point, the NAHB was touching 90 on the survey. In July, it was back at 80. We thought it'd stay at 80, came down to 75. So that's still a strong reading, but you know, it is working its way backwards slowly but surely. And we had home building permits and housing starts. Housing starts had quite a big fall, down 7% month on month after being up 3.5% the month before. The permits went the other way. That's the leading one on that. They actually rose by 2.6% after being down by 5.3%. We also had the FOMC minutes came out last week, and in a way this is a prelude into a much bigger central bank bankers conference, which starts middle of this week in Jackson Hole. This is the regular annual one they hold in Jackson Hole. And in the FOMC minutes, it's become clear that you know, they think the US economy is running strong enough that the taper should start before the end of this calendar year. So that's still the way the Fed is thinking for the time being, although with the proviso that if COVID throws further curveballs which threaten the US economic recovery, they will promptly go into reverse. So this is something which is probably going to come through pretty strongly in the Jackson Hole conference, which starts up, say, in the middle of this week, goes through to the next weekend. And what we expect to hear from most central bankers is still we're watching the recovery as it comes through. We're going to be very cautious about taking away monetary accommodation. But if there's any hint that things go into reverse, we will act. And so that's what we expect to see coming out of Jackson Hole through the course of this week. It will also confirm that central bankers as a group have gone from being proactive about inflation to reactive. And what that means is that in the past, when in their forecast they expected to see inflation starting to pick up and get stronger, they would act ahead of the actual numbers starting to show that inflation pulse. In this cycle, they're going to wait until they've seen inflation, and it's got to be there for quite some time before they will react to those numbers. So again, this very, very distinct change in policy course from central bankers this time around. This week in the US, there's on the data front, we have things like new home sales coming out and existing home sales. They're both expected to lift a little bit in July. These are older figures, so looking for new home sales, for example, to be up about 3%, up being down 6.6%. We have some personal income, personal consumption data coming up for July later in the week. They're expected to tick over and be reasonably strong, up 0.2% from 0.1% the month before. Personal consumption up 0.3% from plus 1% the month before. And we'll also get a revision to Q2 GDP middle of the week. And if anything, it might be revised up slightly to 6.5% from 6.7%. You may recall that when the first look at GDP came out, GDP itself was a little bit on the softer side of expectations at 6.5% annualised. But having said that, final sales in the US were up over 7%. Now, the difference between the two is inventories. And so we had an inventory rundown, which actually detracts from the GDP number. And so in a way, GDP was softer than it really was on the basis of that. And that's where the expectation there'll be something of a little bit of recovery coming through. Out of China last week, again, this story of things starting to top off a bit. And we saw it there with fixed asset investment spending. Market thought that we would get a reduction from the June number from 12.6% year-on-year to 11.3%. We actually came down to 10.3%. Not a big miss on the downside, but you know, clearly starting to show some signs of fading. It was more pronounced for industrial production, and this is where the Chinese have been starting to put clamps on things like steel production again and bits and pieces like that. That came back to 6.4% from 8.3% going back to June. The market was looking for 7.8% there. The misses now on industrial production, we're seeing that very directly for Australia now. In, we've seen almost definitely the peak in iron ore prices, where iron ore prices have been coming back quite a bit over the course of the past month. We were way above $200 a ton. We're now knocking on the door of $150 a ton. So it's, we're starting to see the beginnings of that pullback running through a key price for the Australian economy. And also retail sales in China. This one came back most of all. So it was rising at 12.1% year-on-year back in June. There was an expectation that it would be 11.5% for the month of July. We actually fell all the way down to 8.5%. Still not a bad figure, but that's quite a big fallback from where it was going back to the month of June. And this is partly down to some of the restrictions which are starting to be reimposed in China. COVID is running again in China, and there are lockdowns starting to be imposed in parts of China to try and contain it. And so it's just taking some toll on some of these numbers, such as retail sales. We haven't got much in the way of data coming out this week out of China. Out of Australia last week, we had the RBA minutes, and they confirmed that the economic forecasts for Australia are now highly uncertain, and that's because it's difficult to judge exactly what COVID and the response is going to do. We've got these lockdowns. The longer these lockdowns go, the more the damage to economic activity in the near term. And what we did get from the Reserve Bank was an assurance that in need, they will change course and they will go back to supporting the economy if that's deemed to be necessary. Also, of course, through this last week, we had another National Cabinet meeting right at the end of the week, and we've got this litmus test, I suppose, for how well we're going to do going forward about how much we can tolerate around the country in terms of COVID and hospitalizations and deaths. And this all revolves around the idea that once we get up to 70%, then 80% vaccination rates, that almost regardless of the COVID numbers, providing hospitalization rates and deaths are not rising too fast, you can open things up. We'll wait and see. You know, there's a lot of difference of opinion, obviously, between various state premiers about that, and how seamlessly or otherwise that will progress. We had some numbers out last week too, which were interesting. We had second quarter wage price index, and not quite the pressure in wages that we thought. You know, this is Q2, so this is, you know, going back before the lockdowns really. And we're seeing some pressure starting to come through, we thought, but not according to the ABS. The quarter-on-quarter wage price index rose only 0.4%, market was looking for 0.6. So that was a bit of a surprise. And the annual change in wages has lifted only a little from 1.5% to 1.7%. So, yeah, that seems to suggest it's going to take a bit longer to get wages growth running. Then, of course, we had the labour force data, which was truly quirky. You had the whole of July where Greater Sydney was in lockdown, and the beginnings of lockdowns, obviously, coming through in Melbourne. And you would have expected there would have been some damage in the labour force survey. Instead, what we got was apparently a 2,200 increase in employment. The market was looking for a 45,000 reduction after a 29,100 increase the month before. We did see the participation rate come back, and this seems to be the way in which the labour market is working in these COVID shutdowns, and that is that when people get laid off because of COVID and they're in lockdown, one thing it's very hard for them to do is to go and look for work because it's not around. You can't go through to interviews. You're locked within your suburb, all these sorts of things. So unsurprisingly, they answer when the question in the labour force survey comes up, you know, did you actively look for work in the period? Well, they didn't. They may do at some point in the future when we come out of lockdown, but whilst you're in lockdown, there's not much point. And so we saw the participation rate come down to 66% from 66.2. And in New South Wales, it came down a full percentage point from 65.9 down to 64.9. So that accounts for why the unemployment rate surprisingly came down in the month of July. It was expected to go up to 5% from 4.9%. It came down to a new 12-year low of 4.6%. But it doesn't mean much because it's all in the participation rate. And that participation rate, what it gives in terms of an unemployment rate that looks unbelievably good whilst we're going through these lockdowns, it will take back when we start to get into the recovery period, because many of those people who answered that question not actively looking for work will be actively looking for work again once they start to once things start to open up. And so the participation rate will soar and the unemployment rate will go up with it, even if you've got employment rising. So it's one of those quirky things which is running through. But the combination of wages, loss of jobs, and the weakness which is here in economic activity, it does militate against the RBA moving to raise interest rates any time in the near future. And it was interesting that even one of the central banks, which was tipped to lift interest rates last week, which was the RBNZ, they backed off. You know, obviously, they've got a COVID outbreak there now. And so it does look as if these low interest rates are persisting for longer. And central banks could make things even easier. Where we'd sit in our own circumstance is that the RBA was due to go back from $5 billion of purchases to $4 billion starting in September. It's very likely they'll reverse that and go back to $5 billion of purchases again in the fairly near future. So you'd expect to see those sorts of changes. This week in Australia, more Q2 stuff, plus also July reading. We've got Q2 construction work done, Q2 private new capex. Both of these should be pretty good. Looking for construction work done still to have risen by 2.5%. Remembering you know, this is Q2. It will take a hit, obviously, when we get into Q3. And Q2 private new capital expenditure, which was up 6.3% in the first quarter, you know, we're starting to see a lot of business investment spending. That still would have been good for the second quarter, so probably up about 2.5%. These are contributors to the GDP number, which comes out on the 1st of September. And Q2 GDP here still looks very, very good. The only problem is we know that Q3 is going to go promptly into reverse, and we're going to see some damage that comes through in that one. And on Friday, we get the July retail trade numbers. And market expectation on this is that it was a fall of 2.9% month on month after being down 1.8% in June. I did see some MasterCard numbers which suggest that 2.9% down is a bit light on. It could be nearer to 5% down month on month. So we'll start to see some of the damage in these numbers when we get the July retail trade numbers coming out. Also in Australia, still going through company reporting season. Company reports have been stunningly good, but you know, obviously warnings about what might happen next. Also the payout ratios have been huge. So one group of people are benefiting greatly, and that is self-funded retirees who have a lot of shares. The payout ratios are literally bonanza this time around. It's also boosting superannuation accounts. There's still a lot of income coming through for some running through this period. Europe, last week we had a revision to second quarter GDP. It really didn't revise things very much. Europe did very well in Q2. GDP rose by 2% quarter on quarter. The annual change was just notched back a little bit to 13.6% year on year from 13.7%, but broadly speaking, not much in the revisions there. Europe this week, we've got August manufacturing, purchasing managers' indices, services, PMIs, and consumer confidence, also the ECB minutes, although they'll be, you know, people be watching more Jackson Hole rather than the ECB minutes. And if anything, the European numbers are coming through better than the US numbers at the moment. So looking for their manufacturing PMI to be around 62.0 from 62.8. Services sector PMI, 59.8 back from 60.2. But they're not fading as much as the US. What I should say about all these purchasing managers index too, these are some of the world's best leading indicators of where economies go next. And they're already telling a story of how different this recovery phase is compared with earlier ones. If you go back to earlier ones, it's usually the emerging markets that really lead global economic recovery. This time around, when we're looking at the purchasing managers' indexes for most emerging economies, they're hovering around 50. So that's the expansion contraction line. For the advanced economies, something we've never seen in any of our lifetimes, they're running towards 60 relative to 50 in the emerging world. So this time around, it's the developed world which is leading the global economic recovery, and it's the emerging markets which are very much lagging. So very, very different sort of recovery this time around. It's powerfully beneficial to the advanced world relative to the developing world. Now, over time, that can lead to all sorts of tensions, but it's just one of the interesting aspects of this recovery relative to the past.